Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Voices for Change 2.0, the only podcast that focuses on mental health while mixing in movies, music, books, sports, and pop culture. Here are your hosts, Rebecca and Joe Lombardo.
Hey, good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining us here at Voices for Change 2.0. We are so glad to have you with us.
Yes, thanks for being with us this morning on our humble little show. It's June.
It's June.
Very much June. And, hopefully you guys are getting to go out and enjoy some sunny weather and some warm weather, and it's not all gloomy like it is here in beautiful downtown Detroit, where it was raining this morning. But,
And it got up to 90 degrees last week, so that's always fun.
Yeah, that's always fun.
But we're not complaining. We'll take this over a Michigan winter any day. So.
Well, you will.
Oh.
Yeah, I prefer the cold.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
It's all right. I forgive you.
You're not going to leave me over that, are you?
No, you're still good.
That's good. So anyway, we got a lot of stuff going on today. And the exciting thing is our guest. Our guest is...
She is a writer, a speaker, and a mental health advocate. Mm-hmm. And... She has come up with a new sort of program for treating mental health, and it's something that we haven't talked about really too much before on the show. It's kind of opposite of what our most of our guests are talking about.
Yeah, usually we try, one thing we like to try and highlight on our show is, everybody's journey is different. Everybody's experience is different. Everybody's methods of treatment are different. And, if we're going to keep talking mental health, we need to shed light on all the different options that are out there, And what our guest is bringing to the table, man, I can't talk today, is, yet another outlook on treatment, and we want to shed some light on that. Maybe this would be something beneficial for you if previous
methods,
thank you, were not successful. So please welcome to the show the wonderful, lovely, and talented Aspen Morrow.
Thank you for having me today.
Good morning.
It's our pleasure. Thanks for joining us. Hopefully it wasn't too early of a wake for you. Excuse me.
I will try and keep the coffee. 9 o'clock. Go ahead.
It's 9 o'clock where you're at.
It's 9 o'clock.
Where are you
and
calling?
It is sunny, and I'm calling from the Boise, Idaho area. And I hope you don't hear my roosters on the line. They're outside with me this morning.
Oh, that is awesome. We haven't had roosters before.
That really is cool.
Usually ends up just being cats, and it's usually our cats. we welcome the roosters. We enjoy roosters. They're kind of awesome, and it's kind of cool that you've got roosters.
Yeah, it really is. You're our first Idaho guest.
Yes. Yeah, we've had many people on from Colorado. I actually have...
there's one person here in Idaho.
I can't remember now if Jeremy lives in Idaho or Iowa.
I don't remember.
I don't know. A childhood friend of mine lives out that way, and I always mix up Iowa and Idaho when it comes to where he lives.
That's all right, honey.
Yep,
it's
most
okay.
People
I'm
do.
Sure, I'm
Iowa. Iowa has the corn. We have the potatoes. So.
Right.
That's really a good way to remember it. Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah. So are you corn or potatoes?
Which
personally, I'm a fan of the potatoes. So,
I like both.
All right. Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Well, without further falderal, we're just going to go ahead and get in here with the questions.
Yep.
Unless you have any questions for us before we move on.
Nope.
Okay.
Okay, then. All right.
Well, we'll start off with a question that has kind of become...
Our jumping off point.
Yeah, a common question that we ask almost all guests, and that is, where does your mental health journey begin?
Well, I would have been diagnosed probably childhood bipolar if they had been diagnosing kids like that in the 70s and early 80s. Looking back, obviously, is a lot more obvious than at the time. My mother was an RN, and she didn't even know. So, but really, it kind of came to a screaming head my senior year of college, and I was involuntarily hospitalized for 2 weeks, and then that was when I was given a diagnosis. That was really my senior year of college was the first year I'd really heard about bipolar myself.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, that's kind
pretty
of
common.
A recurring theme mm-hmm. for us is it seems to be something in, you know, late adolescence to early 20s where,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's you know, like it hit back. She was diagnosed at 19.
I was diagnosed at 19, but hit me sooner than that.
Exactly. You know, like yeah. you were saying, you know, if they'd been diagnosing childhood bipolar at the time, you know, so yeah, that's, I'd be curious to see if it didn't have something to do with going through puberty. You know, you figure the rest of your body is going through all sorts of changes. Maybe your brain chemistry or what have you is going through changes as well. I wonder. I should look into that.
Yeah, I should look that up.
So
when you were first treated for mental illness, were you given medications, therapy, et cetera?
Yeah, I spent a good 4 years on medication of all kinds. Some of the medications I personally have been on over those years, even before, it was primarily Depakote at that time, but I had a relapse later. And at that time I was on, during my first hospitalization, I was on Zyprexa, Paxil, Depakote, and then Depakote for several years. And they just were really bad. I was just so sensitive to every side effect. I wasn't really getting the mood stability that I was looking for, but I was so young. I didn't know anything differently. I didn't know who to ask. The internet really wasn't even as prevalent in, 1999, 2000 was when I was diagnosed, 19 years ago. But, so I spent several years in the system. I, managed to graduate college, but I was very severe. The psychiatrist I talked to said he was one of the most severe cases he'd ever seen. And he
wow.
encouraged me to get on disability right after college. And so I applied for disability right around the time my student loans were coming due. Welcome to adulthood. And
really.
And I was turned down for disability, thankfully. I know for a lot of people that's not a thankful thing, but I can look back in gratitude now and, really be persistent that I had to find another way. I mean, the system was failing me. The doctors were failing me. The meds weren't working. And I was losing everything. I had gotten married about a year out of college. We had our first baby. I was losing my marriage. He was threatening custody of my son. And
wow.
It was a mess. I mean, I was on food stamps and public housing due to my mental illness. And I had been a top performing collegiate athlete, traveled abroad, editor of the school paper. It wasn't like, but bipolar hit me like a train and took everything.
Wow. We're both sorry that you went through that.
Yeah,
it's,
for sure.
It hits
a lot
everybody.
Of us have.
Yeah, so many different ways, and people don't realize the financial aspect that having this disease really really brings a toll on a person.
Especially when you don't have the proper insurance coverage.
Yeah, you know.
I was lucky enough to be able to be treated through the county that we live in for many years, which was in a way a benefit because they just gave you samples of the medication. You didn't have to go and pay hundreds of dollars for your meds. But at the same time, you're kind of treated like a number on a file.
Yeah.
Just sort of shuffled in and out. And,
you're cattle. Yeah, basically cattle.
Yeah.
You know. So when after Beck and I got married and I changed jobs once or twice, we finally got, you know, really good medical insurance. And I'm grateful to this day for it.
Yeah. You know.
But, you know, aside from the issues that you went through with your marriage, was the rest of your family supportive in what you were going through? Or, you know, were you seeing backlash from them as well?
You know, I was, during that time in my life, I was just really quite alone. My own parents had just recently gone through a divorce, and they still had young children at home. And so they were in their own battle. They, you know, instead of a mental health battle, they were in emotional and wounding and custody over the younger children. So I was just pretty much on my own during that time. And I lived far, far away. I lived in Oklahoma where I had gone to college, and they lived in Idaho and Utah. And, you know, it was just, I was pretty alone, but the system did provide many benefits for me during that time, like the public housing assistance, the food stamps. I was on WIC. I went through their nutrition programs, which, it, you know, was partly humiliating just because it wasn't, you know, quite the graduation life I had envisioned those years in college.
Right.
But it was still there for me. And I also was able to go get samples of meds when I needed. But I remember the day I picked up some medication that I was not doing well, I just couldn't take it. It was like my body was repelling it. Like my hand wouldn't even go to my mouth. And I found out within a week that I was pregnant. And I think it was just my, you know, body's intuition at that time, even though I needed the medication, I was very unstable. I was unmedicated, and I went in for help. I just couldn't do the help that they gave me. But I think in a way it was just protection for my child because, you know, we don't always know what those medications do in the early stages of development. So, again, just going back, I'm grateful that, you know, the higher power looking out. But so we went through several really dark years. My husband and I have now been married for 17 years. I'm still married to the same man. We have two more children. Yay! And he was, it was very difficult during those times. It's hard to live with someone who's mentally ill. And I was, I was kind of a bipolar capital B. And so, well, he didn't know what to do with someone like that.
Your story is very similar to ours. We'll be married 17 years in August ourselves, and you know, I'm the one with.
Thanks.
Same to you. I'm the one with the bipolar disorder, and he's the relatively stable one.
Oh, that's up for debate.
And he does a great job taking care of me during my most difficult time. So,
Has your husband, you know, has he kind of adjusted his outlook towards your bipolar and stuff, and, you know, working with you more on helping to manage it?
I guess the blessing for myself and many of the people I work with, but not all, is that I found about 4.5 years into my actual diagnosis, I found a experimental treatment out of Canada that really worked for me. And it gave me, it took about 3 months before I noticed any benefit. I was swallowing copious amounts of gross, big horse pills. They made me burp and have gas, and it just was very unattractive for those months while my body adjusted to the mega doses. But after 3 months, the lights started to come back on. I was so sick at the time that I couldn't read a book, and I couldn't, and I love to read. I mean, I just drink books. And so there was a lot that, you know, the illness had taken away from me, including the ability to cook and really think clearly and not have so much brain fog that I felt like I was walking through mist all the time. And so for me, I was grateful to find something that worked for me 15 years ago. And so our marriage since then has been completely different. I have had a couple small relapses or, you know, kind of mini episodes. But most of the time, I'm able to just self-manage in a way that no one around me is really suffering. We all have bad days. I especially kind of, you know, one day a month kind of thing. But it's really not... it's really not bipolar-esque anymore. If someone were to take me in and diagnose me today on treatment, I wouldn't be diagnosable. So I feel very fortunate that although I still have to self-care, because it does, symptoms come back if I don't take care of myself, just like someone who has found a medication that works for them and say they just kind of feel so much better that they forget to keep taking the medication, and then all of a sudden they have a relapse. That's exactly how it is for me. I just have natural meds that I take instead of pharmaceutical meds. So I don't have a med management doctor, but I do have an emergency doctor, and he's my family physician who's a medical doctor, naturopath, and he did his residency in psych.
Okay.
So that's good.
Yeah, it's good that you've got it, you know, managed and everything. Exactly. You know, for so many of us, we don't have that. So, very cool.
I'm a certified peer support specialist here in Idaho, and you know, I spend a lot of time with the mental health community, and basically just sharing everything that worked for me, because I had bipolar, ADD, sensory issues, horrible anxiety, self-harm as a teenager, and really just finding things that help and horrible sleep. Like I think almost everyone with bipolar has sleep and digestive issues. So
Big time, very much so. Did you experience any stigma due to your diagnosis?
I certainly did at the time. I remember even getting out of the hospital, and no one had really heard I was diagnosed, but it was a pretty small college campus, and just the whispers and the stares and the, you know, my boyfriend kept trying to tell me it was paranoia, but I knew it was more than that. And, you know, being able to differentiate between the paranoia, and it, believe me, that does not help paranoia. But what was surprising for me with stigma was for about 10 years, I lived quite the normal life. I didn't tell anyone. I went on to be a businesswoman of the year. I had a successful identity theft firm, and nobody knew. Like, nobody knew my past history. And then I started really feeling compelled to share what I had done to not only recover, but to self-manage effectively. You know, to just kind of finally come out. But for a long time, I considered it a very strict HIPAA right to privacy about anything regarding my psych history. So when I experienced stigma the most is when I announced my book med-free bipolar. And when I started talking about my upcoming book, Med-Free Bipolar, everything changed. I was getting stigma from every side. I was getting stigma from the mental health community because they thought I was against medication. I'm not against medication. I'm for people knowing all their options. When medication did not work for me, I had to find another way. I don't think that way is for everybody, but I was getting stigma from the mental health community. I had people in bipolar chat rooms. My book hadn't even come out yet. I wasn't like selling anything. I was just there. And I got stigma from that group, stigma from the doctors. I got stigma from friends. I had people who'd known me 10 years coming up to me and giving me like pats, you know, like those pity pats on the shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
And
oh,
they'd
geez.
Say things like, are you okay? I heard you just got out of the hospital. And I looked at them and I said, that was 10 years ago.
Oh, geez.
You're just
Good
now
Lord.
Hearing the story. So it was, there was, like, people don't realize how strong stigma was. But it was strong enough that it actually put my identity theft business out of business.
Oh, that sucks. Well, I'm sorry that you went through that.
You know, oh, it's all good because that opened up so many more possibilities.
And we're going to talk about those possibilities. On the other side of this, we're going to take a quick break. And we're going to listen to No One Is Alone by Alexander Rodriguez. Stick around.
No one here to guide you. Now you're on your own. Only me beside you. Still you're not alone. No one is alone. Truly, no one is alone. Sometimes people leave you halfway through the wood. Others may deceive you. You decide what's good. You decide alone. But no one is alone. People make mistakes. Fathers, mothers, people make mistakes. Holding to their own, thinking they're alone. Honor their mistakes, everybody makes one another's terrible mistakes. Witches can be right, and giants can be good. You decide what's right, you decide what's good. Just remember, someone is on your side, someone else is not. While you're seeing your side, maybe you forgot that they are not alone. So, someone is on your side.
Hey, welcome back to Voices for Change 2.0. I'm Joe. This is Rebecca sitting next to me. Hi, baby.
Hello.
And if you're just tuning in, we are being joined today by the wonderful Aspen Morrow. Am I saying the last name right? I should have asked that before we even got going.
Oh, yeah. Actually, right on. It's Morrow, like tomorrow.
Cool. All right. Because I'm good at screwing up names. You know, it happens to me so much that you would think I'd be more sensitive and aware of these things, but
which is ridiculous. Our last name is so easy, but
well, some people screw it up like you wouldn't believe. You know, what are you gonna do, babe?
Yeah, we've seen some really humorous translations of our last name on pizza boxes and stuff like
oh,
that.
Oh yeah, yeah, the spellings are just incredible.
I think my favorite is Lombato. Lombato.
Yeah, that was a fun one. They always want to spell it LUM, and it's like, come on, man.
Anyway, enough about us.
Anyway, yeah. So we were talking about opportunities before the break, Miss Aspen, and what we want to know is, please tell us about Aspen Brain Health.
Okay. Well, the best way that I like to educate people is just kind of putting a new term into their vocabulary. We currently have amazing medication options, unlike anything we've ever seen before in history. There are, mm-hmm. you know, we all have choices in kind of how we treat. Some people make choices unconsciously. They are unmedicated or unstable, or they are self-medicating, or they're using medication. The term med-free, I developed the med-free method, but I've developed the med-free method. So med-free to me means free from the need of medication, because if you're really unmedicated and you're just calling yourself med-free, but you're really unstable and need medication, then no one around you is really enjoying that. And you are not living the best life that you could on medication or something like the med-free method. So there are some great places. For example, a good candidate for the med-free method would be someone who wants natural alternatives or someone who's not doing well on medication and has really given it a good go around, preferably for years. But there are some really good resources out there. Kelly Brogan is a holistic psychiatrist out of New York. And I work with her. She has what's called a vital mindset program. And it's a med-free, drug-free, kind of another method that's similar to mine. Brain Balance Centers, they only work with children up to age 17. But Brain Balance Centers are another example of a non-medical, drug-free program. Dr. Amen, the Amen Clinics. The Amen Clinics method, if you want to look into the Amen Clinics method, it's amenclinics.com. That is who I am trained through as a certified brain health coach. So I use a combination of everything out there. So in Aspen Brain Health, I use the best of holistic psychiatry. I use the best of naturopathic means. Although I myself am not a doctor of any kind. I don't want people coming to me because they think I'm a doctor or a licensed counselor. I am a ministerial counselor. What that means is I can do spiritual counseling, interfaith counseling, marriage counseling, but really I'm helping people who want to use natural things to enhance their treatment along with medication, or they want to become completely med-free and symptom-free. I think that symptom-free should be all of our goal.
Right. Yeah,
so
exactly.
So basically that's what I do at Aspen Brain Health. I do have some other, I have a holistic RN. I have a naturopath that I partner with. I have a med management doctor. And sometimes we even work with people all over the world. We work long distance. I have a client in Korea, one in Saudi Arabia, one in Canada. and then all across the country who have either read my book, Med-Free Bipolar, or because it's available worldwide, or they just, you know, heard about the Med-Free method from somewhere. So typically, we even work on a donation basis. So in 6 years, we haven't turned anyone away for inability to pay.
Oh, that's good.
And,
that's real good.
Yeah, we just basically give away everything that we've learned, what's helped us. A lot of us are recovered psych patients ourselves, either even some of us who had a great experience with allopathic system medicine, but just were curious about another way. We also have a company that we partner with in Canada called True Hope that provides, if people want to use some of their supplements, they give them a free support line. So they have a micronutrient support line. People can call in Monday through Friday and really kind of have someone holding their hand so that they're not alone. I pretty much take anyone but someone in crisis. If they're in crisis, that's the perfect time that they need med management. And so anyone not immediately in crisis is who we work with.
Okay. That's really good to know.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, because it's, you know, we've seen all sorts of extremes doing this as long as we have. You know, when it comes to managing symptoms, you know, and
just
you know,
in our own lives with my situation.
That too, you know. And, you know, you see people that are, you know, they'll get angry and vehement, you know, I have to be on medication or I'm not taking these meds or, you know, and they're very extreme in their views, you know. So it kind of sounds like, you know, for you and what you're doing, you know, you recognize, okay, this is another way for treatment, but yet, you know, if you're in crisis, yeah, you should still be, you know, seeking this kind of help, you know, and it's a nice balance.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. I encourage everyone to have a crisis plan. Yeah. I mean, a crisis plan is very important, and I have a crisis plan. I've had to use my crisis plan. And so really just acknowledging, I think that's one of the things that's difficult with stigma and with diagnosis is really just kind of becoming self-aware and knowing, hey, look, even if I took all the diagnosis off the table and just looked at symptoms, do I want these symptoms or do I not want these symptoms? And how do I want to address these symptoms? For example, you know, one way to deal with anxiety is with a Klonopan or a Xanax or an anti-anxiety med, whereas I have found something called inositol. It's I-N-O-S-I-T-O-L. And inositol is a vitamin B-ish derivative. I think it's even made from that Iowa corn. And you can get it at a health food store. And it can stop a sensory or an anxiety attack within 5 minutes. Is it going to work for everyone? No. But it is... the problem with alternative medicine is that when it comes to mental illness, most of it is very ineffective, and most doctors or even naturopaths don't know anything about it. So I have one criteria. If it's natural, it better work as good, if not better than a prescription, or you might as well just go get the prescription. I love essential oils, but I've not seen anyone stable, really stable for chronic mental illness with essential oils. I love them. I use them, but they are not a medication alternative.
Right.
Excuse me. I'm now losing my voice, so you take over.
Oh, okay. That's great. That's great. Good job. so... considering all the all-natural aspects of this, You want me to ask that one?
Yeah, just ask that part.
Oh, all right. For those that may not be aware, you know, share some of the benefits of you know, going the all-natural route versus having, you know, prescription medication.
Well, I like examples. So,
no problem. Examples are good.
Or stories. A lot of, and I just love giving value. I mean, I have people who call me and, you know, sometimes they want to make a donation to our nonprofit, and sometimes they don't. But Aspen mm-hmm. Brain Health is a nonprofit. And we just want to serve this underserved population. You know, the population that what you said, they're extreme. They're like, I'm not going to take meds. Well, sometimes right. they won't take supplements or anything else either. And that's okay. I want to fix mental illness, not fix stupid. So, sorry, bad joke.
You can't fix stupid.
So I just want to fix mental illness. So that's why a lot of times I don't get too attached about, you know, what they decide to do. But I was very angry, like this righteous burning anger came up in me when I started learning about natural lithium. Natural lithium used to be very prevalent in the treatment of mental illness. We've heard about lithium hot springs and lithium bath houses back in the day, even back to the 1500s. Lithium, in its natural form, was a common remedy, just like vitamin C for scurvy. Scurvy is a horrible, debilitating illness that we don't see much anymore because we found the vitamin C cure. Well, lithium in its natural form was converted to a prescription compound, patented, and, you know, sold as a prescription now. But I mm-hmm. use natural lithium and recommend it. There's not a lot of research. Doctors don't like it because they can't measure it in the blood. You can't go in for blood draws, but you can have other lithium levels checked to make sure they're not too high. But lithium in the natural form works on a cellular level and not in the blood. So that's something that is just, I think, should be common knowledge. If someone does really well on lithium, then the prescription lithium, they might be able to consider natural lithium and get all kinds of benefits without the mega dosing that you have to do in prescription lithium. So you can basically get medicated levels on minimal doses.
Right. That makes sense, you know, because you figure if you're getting the prescription lithium, you know, there's, I don't really know any other way to say it, there's a bunch of other crap in there with it. So it's kind of uh-huh. diluted. Whereas if you're getting the natural lithium, you're just getting lithium.
I was on it.
But they also,
a while.
They just chemically, yeah, they chemically work different. So prescription mm-hmm. lithium works in the blood and not as much is actually utilized in the brain. And lithium orotate works in the cells and goes directly to the brain. So that is why, like, a mega dose of prescription lithium, you have to have your kidneys checked, you have to have your lithium levels checked. And I have many older clients who are now on dialysis for kidney failure due to long-term lithium use. So that's why I was just so angry, because I had lost friends to lithium. And I was just like, ah. Oh. 800 milligrams a day of lithium prescription versus maybe 200 milligrams of natural lithium without any side effects.
Oh, okay. Well, that's quite a difference.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like I said, I was on it at one point, and it didn't work for me, and that metallic taste in your mouth really just...
Mm-hmm.
didn't sell it for me. I wasn't a fan.
Well, that's because they also use lithium in batteries.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, there's that. You know.
Which makes me feel really good.
You got that. They stuck a battery in my mouth taste.
Yeah, exactly.
You just keep going and going and going. Sorry, that was really...
That was terrible.
That was a bad... I am sorry for that joke.
You're fired.
No, it's really... That was pretty good. A little energizer.
Yeah.
He's fired.
No,
okay, what's your next question?
So how do you feel about the use of cannabis that's gotten so popular lately?
I think the term bipolar is overused, but when it shouldn't be. But I think it's actually an appropriate word for how I feel about cannabis, because on the plus side, I have seen it work for a lot of people. It's not part of the med-free method, because I think there are other things that I have found that can work better than that without some of the downside. So I'm kind of for it and against it in the same time. Part of the reason I'm against it is because historically teenagers, some of the largest statistics of first-time psychosis and first-time hospitalization and subsequent diagnosis have come from first-time pot use. So cannabis can be a double-edged sword, just like a prescription. And I think that the public needs to be really well-educated on the benefits and the downside before they just legalize it in every state, before they don't have any restrictions on it. But I also feel like that personal choice is important, and that each person needs to learn how their brain and body react to it. Unfortunately, sometimes the only way to find that out is a teenager who tries it and ends up in involuntary hospitalization.
Mm-hmm. Okay. It's a kind of a weird dichotomy for me with my family history. I don't know if you're familiar. There was an author back about 20 some odd years ago, Peter McWilliams. I was a self-help author and everything, and he was my cousin, and he was actually instrumental in getting marijuana legalized for medical use in California.
Mm-hmm.
He actually passed away around 1999 or 2000. He was going through some stuff, and you know, he had AIDS, and he was dealing with a few other medical situations, and the only way he was able to keep the medications down and not throw them up that he was taking was to smoke pot, because it would help with the nausea.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so from that, so I kind of look at it from that point of view, the medical things, but seeing how people use it with, you know, treatment of various mental health issues that they have, you know, it's like anything, you know, it's going to affect your brain chemistry, and, you know, is it beneficial for, you know, what works? It's like I said at the beginning of the show, what works for one person might not work for the next, you know?
Absolutely.
And so, you know, having that outlook is how we have to look at everything, really, you know. And you know, that's one reason why I'm happy that we actually have you on the show, is because you're presenting another point of view for our listeners to look into, especially if their current treatments aren't
not working for them.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The end.
Yeah. And I think if I had to take, you know, if someone said, what's your hard stance on marijuana, I would say I'm for CBD oil, and I'm for medical marijuana, but I'm not for the open legalization of a state, mainly because of that caveat. Most people don't know the effects of marijuana on the brain, and they should.
Mm-hmm.
So it can be absolutely positive, but not for everyone. And so, you know, that would be my... And And I do like choices. I really don't like, you know, all the, I mean, forced medication. Just, you don't even want to go there with me, because if I'm not, if someone were to try and force medicate me, it would not be good.
they're going to have a bad day.
Mm-hmm.
So,
both of us are.
Yeah, exactly. So how far do you think we've come as far as stigma is concerned?
Well, I guess it took 264 years between the introduction of vitamin C for scurvy and its common knowledge for the treatment of that. But mm-hmm. we are afraid of what we don't understand. In my book, I really believe that most mental illness is a severe, hangry brain issue. And when the brain is properly nutrited, properly supplemented, properly mineralized, it balances and it's not so hangry. And when we look at mental illness as not this big, scary unknown and the final frontier of medicine that we don't understand, and we look at it from what's called an epigenetic factor, it becomes a little less scary. And I think that is really what it's going to take for stigma to be reduced. Because as long as we feel that we don't understand it, or we don't fully understand what causes it, or we continue to use words like, you know, psychotherapy and psychiatrists aren't real doctors, then the stigma remains. And the brain, you know, just not too long ago, they didn't think the brain was neuroplastic. They thought we had a fixed number of neurons and dendrites. And yet the Dr. Amen brain scans, he's scanned over 100,000 brains. And that imaging, where we can see on a screen what bipolar looks like, we can see on a screen the ring of fire ADD. We can see on a screen, and that physical legitimization of mental illness being a disorder that's treatable and fixable, and we can prove it on scan, that will reduce stigma.
That's wild. That he scanned 100,000 brains, and that's fascinating. You can actually look at it. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
You know, and I think that's kind of a big thing is the education. You know, it's one thing Beck and I have brought up in the past is, you know, I think if we're going to overcome the stigma that we see every day, education is a big part of it. You know, and it's not mm-hmm. just about talking about it. It's, you know, doing these studies and, you know, having the physical evidence to show, you know, science is, mm-hmm. you know, absolutely a key tool in overcoming stigma.
But so is love.
Yeah. Yes.
You know, just we are such a society that is lacking love and compassion and empathy. And, you know, I still get sensory attacks every now and then, especially the back part of the brain has the cerebellum system, which is stimulated by noise and triggers. And so if I have like a loud noise or a crying baby behind me or someone screaming in my ear, which could, you know, probably trigger anyone, I just have this, it's a central nervous system flare up and it hurts. I mean, the sound actually activates a cellular response, and it feels like the sound is stabbing me in the cells. So if someone's stabbing you all over your arms and legs and brain with little needles, and that's how a sensory attack feels for me, I want that noise to stop. So one day at a race event on 4th of July, I had this young teenager who was screaming right in my ear, and I couldn't really get away from her. So I just very sweetly turned to her and said, "Would you mind not screaming quite so loud in my ear? I have sensory issues." And she turned to her dad and was like, "This girl's trying to stop me from having fun on 4th of July." And the whole family started in on it and started screaming.
Oh,
my God. You just kind of think about, would that have happened if I had been in a wheelchair, even if I didn't have anything else, you know, visibly wrong with me? And that's kind of the problem, I think, with stigma, is people need to have compassion even if they don't have understanding.
Yeah. That's one thing that's seriously lacking in our society, and I think in general, is compassion. You know, people will look at a situation, and not even a mental health situation, but just in general, and be like, "Well, it doesn't bother me. I that has no effect on me or my life. Why should I care?" You know, and until you can actually put yourself in someone else's shoes and try to understand what they're going through, you know, that it's really hard to change those things. You know, I don't want to go off on a political rant or anything,
no,
but
please don't.
You know, but it's just, you know, you always hear about
topic.
Yeah, you know, you always hear about, you know, for example, Congress wanting to cut Social Security. Well, if Social Security gets cut, that affects my mother, that affects my wife, you know, and that might not affect the next guy who doesn't have any horses in that race, if you will, but for me, it does, you know. And so when there's other issues at play, I try and put myself in that person's situation, you know, go, "Well, you know, I understand what you're going through."
Mm-hmm. Well, we are coming up to our last few minutes of the show, but I did just want to get out these last two questions, if we could. And the first one is, what is next for you and Aspen Brain Health?
Well, if I weren't a nonprofit, I would have loved to franchise it. I will be training MedFree Method coaches. So someone, and I don't have that ready yet, but I really just want to help get the word out that there are options, that you're not, you know, pigeonholed into just being medicated or unmedicated. So we will be certifying coaches in the MedFree Method. I am working on a couple more books. I have Eat Weird, Be Normal is a diet and cookbook, but it's really bad. Like, it's unedited, unformatted. So I'd like to finish that instead of just having it. It's a 99-cent book on Amazon, because that's the lowest they'll let me sell it for. Otherwise, they just give it to you free, because the content is good, but the formatting sucks. So really, just a lot of times we just raise funds for specific projects, and I'm kind of stuck in the editing and formatting process of that book. So I'd like to look at raising funds to finish that book, and just more. For a long time, I didn't take one-on-one clients, just because I had speaking stuff that I was doing, and I just wanted to reach more people. But I just recently opened an actual little office, and so I'm taking one-on-one clients again, and again, it's donation based. So that's kind of exciting that people can get some private help with what their specific list of symptoms are, as long as they, you know, read my disclaimer at AspenBrainHealth.com and just know who I am and who I'm not.
Right.
Okay.
That's very exciting.
Yeah, that is.
And then finally, where can people find you on social media?
I am on Facebook primarily. I have my personal friend page, which sometimes is filled up, but I have author Aspen Morrow on Facebook also. And I have my website and blog are all at that aspenbrainhealth.com. And then, yeah, I'm kind of on LinkedIn, kind of on a couple other places, but Facebook and website are really my two best sources. And Amazon, obviously. I'm on Amazon, Kindle, and Audible.
Cool. Very
all
cool
right.
With the Audible.
Yeah,
that's very cool. So, all right,
we'll have to pick your brain someday about how you got on Audible. That's something I haven't done yet.
Yeah. I recommend you guys have the recording equipment. So mm-hmm. Look into ACX.
Well, it looks like we have lost our caller, but we were just about to wrap up with her anyway.
Okay.
It looks like she's online but has lost audio, so I guess that's going to wrap it up for us for today. We appreciate it, Aspen Morrow, being on the show.
Absolutely.
We are very grateful for your point of view.
Yep, and your time, and you know, getting up and being on with us at 9 o'clock your time. Mm-hmm. And we are going to end out the show with Levi Kreis with So Much Better. Have a great day, everybody, and we'll see you next week.
Take an afternoon drive. I've been working too hard. I want to leave it all behind me. Pushing and pulling, yeah, the world keeps spinning around and around. But I go with the flow. Nobody's gonna get me down. See, I tell you the secret by the way that love's gonna be. It's a super sexy, conscious, cosmological ecstasy. Getting hold of me. Your body unwind. You see, you got everything you want. You just gotta open up your eyes. Sing it, holding on to something when there's nothing that you can do to change it. Just let it go with the flow. Get about your business doing you. Oh, oh, oh. Say, I tell you a little secret how to make it only. Oh, it's a super sexy, conscious, cosmological ecstasy. Get it hold of me. It's a super sexy, conscious, cosmological ecstasy. Get a hold of me. so let it go. Oh, 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 oh.
Don't miss the Mental Health Memoir of the Year, It's Not Your Journey. It's Not Your Journey is the true story of one woman's 20-year battle with mental illness and her recovery from a suicide attempt in 2013. Rebecca Lombardo candidly reveals her real and raw emotions in dealing with depression, bipolar disorder, the loss of her mother and brother, and more. Pick it up today on Amazon.com or visit www.RebeccaLombardo.com for more information.
Join us next week as Rebecca and Joe continue to battle the stigma of mental illness. Follow us on Twitter at Voices for Change RJ and on Facebook at Voices for Change 2.0.